Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining us on our show today, Jason Vandenboom. He is the CEO, probably the coolest name, by the way. I just want to say that. That's like one of the coolest names of any guest we've had on the show, Vandenboom. I wish that was my name. CEO of ActiveCampaign, which for those of you listening now, you probably have heard of ActiveCampaign because they're absolutely crushing it in the CRM sales automated marketing space based here in Chicago. But what you don't know is that this is a company that is basically a 12 or 13 year overnight success story, as I like to say. They raised about $20 million in 16 or something like that. Crunchbase says something to that effect. Prior to that, they didn't. He literally just like worked his way up from a 7-person team over many years as something that I would say is sort of between Constant Contact and MailChimp, and then solved his own problems. They didn't even have a CRM, which is just like mind-blowing. You'll learn more about it when Jason, you know, he's better at telling you what he did than I am. But they built their own. They built their own help desk. They built all of their own things, and just year over year grew and grew and grew until where they got to a point where they're, 60,000 companies strong or clients strong, which is just insane, focusing on small businesses. And I think the part for me in this conversation, the whole conversation is worth your time, and it's worth your time not just to listen and learn, but also because he introduces a brand new addition to the show and a free giveaway for a lot of you. And for some of you, this might be a $15,000 free giveaway, so I think it's probably worth listening to. But what I love about Jason and founders similar to him, and we've had many on the show, Luke from Farmer's Fridge is one that comes to mind, they play the long game. Just continually chipping away, and they're not sitting there trying to chase dollar bills. It's trying to chase a mission. Then the blinders are set. They know what they're trying to do. They operate 3 to 5 years ahead of where I would say the competition or where we are now. We're here in 2019, and I think Jason was looking slightly over my head, and that was an indicator that he was looking at like 2022. And I think what he does by doing that is he never finds himself in a situation where they're going to be obsolete. They're not just like what you expect. It's what you expect plus more. And that's sort of the story. I think the cool part of the story, and he talks all about the CRM. There's some tips on email blasts and how to scale a company in that stage, and a lot about why ActiveCampaign is so unique. And I even talked about the fact that personally we passed it over because we thought it was too good to be true. And now we're customers. And now Jason's on the show. And he goes one further for us. You guys know our segment in the show called the Startup Inbox, where you can email us and send us questions and comments and things like that. What you might not know is that you can do that by going to technori.com, and there's like a little chat box right in the bottom right hand corner that is Facebook. And if you're signed into Facebook, which all of you are, says the data breach, and you can just go ahead and write these questions to me. Well, what I'm getting at is I said this to Jason, and they offered to make all of you listeners get the second month free. You can sign up for the first month with a free trial, no credit card needed. You use the Technori link, which we will share everywhere, but it's basically activecampaign.com/Technori, and you can get the free month, then the second month free. And then you can go ahead and keep using the product. And I can tell you that we are now users of it. And I was wrong. It is amazing. And it is not too good to be true. Although if he continues to iterate the way he is, it might become too good to be true. But he even took it one step further. I told him, like him, there's a million founders out there who struggle like I do, using CRM, sales lead pipeline, automated marketing, all of those tools, but we don't know how to use them. Salesforce is maybe a little too expensive for some. HubSpot is maybe a little too basic for others. ActiveCampaign is right in the middle, but I don't know whether I can afford the service until I've already gotten far enough down the line that I'm making, you know, return on it. That's the startup problem. You don't know and you don't need everything, but you need to be ready to know and to have everything in real time. And that sentence didn't make any sense, and neither did the problem. But here's what Jason had to offer for select founders coming on this show. So that is all of you who have emailed us to come on the show. If you are a qualified founder, meaning you've come on the show and your business meets certain metrics, they are going to give you a free year of this service of ActiveCampaign. And that to me is an incredible opportunity for you. And it could save you literally $10,000. It could save you more than that. So I highly recommend that you check them out and go ahead and make sure you click and use the Technori link, which we'll share in our emailers and social, and take advantage of that. And if nothing else, you literally, I don't want to say this, but you can literally just email me directly at hello@technori. You can ping me on social media at Catoon and direct, you know, DM me, and I will just introduce you to them because we love the product and they obviously love what we're doing. And so you guys benefit. So with that, why don't I go into the very first Startup Inbox brought to you by ActiveCampaign, which I am super, super, super excited to deliver to you for all the reasons that I just said. So with that said, I'm going to go ahead and look up this user. Technical Pace is the name of the person. I don't know if that's a real person or what it is, but I'll read you the idea and the question. So the idea is to create a doorbell that will stop door-to-door solicitors. When the person presses the button, the doorbell will scan their fingerprint. The system will connect with your phone, and it will try to match that fingerprint against your phone's contacts. If it does not match with any one of your phone's contacts, they will receive an electric shock. How do I create a product to deter solicitors? This is a very long and expensive and data breach intensive way to solve what is essentially the problem that I was, ironically enough, I'm sure this is why my producers put this in front of me, bitching about today on Facebook. When somebody sends you an inbox, a message on your inbox, and it says, "Hey, I saw you recently opened my last email, but you didn't respond. You must have forgotten." No, I didn't forget. I literally just put you in spam immediately. You're trying to solve this for the people who come to the door. I didn't even realize people still solicited at your door. Where do you live? Where do people, like, do people go to your door? I don't, maybe it's because I live in a condo. Nobody solicits me. Here's all I can say about this. I understand your plight. I understand that it's annoying. I would start with putting a sign up that says no solicitors. That's a starting point. You could go the route of having a doorbell like this, or you could just remove the doorbell. Don't have one, then they can't reach out to you. I don't think that you're going to want to be responsible for housing the data that is everyone's fingerprint in your contact list. I feel like that might be taking it a step too far to solve a problem that is, I'm going to guess, now that we don't have, like, I guess it's Bible salesmen. I don't know. Is that even a thing? I don't, who's Jehovah's Witnesses? What happens if the Girl Scout cookie girl comes to my door and trying to sell me some of those delicious, you know, Thin Mints, and then I shock the hell out of her and I lose out on the Girl Scout? Like, that's not worth it. I don't know. I digress. I understand your problem. I'm not the guy to solve it. I think it's a lot of problems that you're trying to take on to solve a small problem. Maybe you start with putting a sign up that says do not solicit. And that's all I can say about that. So with that said, I want to welcome to the show CEO, founder of ActiveCampaign, Jason Vandeboom. I don't even know why or how you got into this business to start with. And I'm sure we'll find that out over the next 20 or so minutes. But the problem for me, and I think anyone who's in a small business and probably even anyone in the enterprise size, is that CRMs are the most difficult things to manage, to understand how you're paying for, and to make sure that you're getting what you're paying for out of it. I have used, both been paid to use Salesforce, as well as paid to use Salesforce. Both times I was unhappy. We have used HubSpot. We use Splash That for events. We have used anything that is a free app on Google. We have used anything that is not a free app, but that's designed for like the 3 to 5 person team. Every single one of them has come up woefully short. So then one day I opened up my inbox and someone from on LinkedIn, another CRM that has problems. And I looked up and there was a person from ActiveCampaign, and I clicked on it. I'd heard of ActiveCampaign being from Chicago, but I really never looked into the product. And then clicked on it, opened it up. I'm like, this is too good to be true. I turn around to Rachel, who's our marketing manager. And I'm like, is this a solution to our like hybrid MailChimp Splash That combo thing? And it was like, I think this is too good to be true. We have a meeting with you guys at Active, and we go and I do the trial, and already, well, let's put it this way. Our first email went out today from ActiveCampaign. So that tells you the end of that story. I want to know from you, like, did you get involved in sales, CRMs, automated marketing things because you thought it was a place that was messed up and you could fix it? Or was it literally this thing that you just sort of like made up in your head? Because I don't understand how you built something that everyone else has seemingly really struggled to do, which is create UX.
Yeah, no, and I think there's a couple of things there. One, small business focus makes quite a big difference. And being a small business ourselves for so long, we never really took on the idea of taking on a market, trying to solve CRM and all the problems that you talk about. It was more so we're just building a product to help manage contacts as a small business. And then over a period of time, a long period of time, we experience a lot of what you're talking about.
So like to that point then, so like, are you looking at this like you open up ActiveCampaign as, well, first off, was it called ActiveCampaign when you started?
Yeah.
So from the get-go, there was, I feel like I actually remember seeing ActiveCampaign in, I want to say 2013 when we started using MailChimp. We got off of like a Constant Contact thing. And I think it came up as like a conversation piece, but I don't know like why we didn't look any further.
Yeah, probably because we were just not as well-known. We still probably are not.
Yeah.
We've always just been so obsessed about kind of the product side, just kind of building things out. We never really...
You just quietly accumulated 60,000 customers.
Yeah, basically.
That's the part that's so fascinating to me.
Yeah, but it... So we started the company, like, despite you probably hearing about us in like 2013,
yeah,
which makes a ton of sense, we started it back in 2003. So that's when I actually started the company with the single idea of just managing contacts. And the only reason that was the case, I was doing consulting work at the time, and I kept running into the same challenge with these small businesses I was working with. And at the time, it was there were other providers. You didn't even have your like MailChimp of the world and whatnot that were very popular. And they just needed a simple way of doing it. So I kept building and kept building it. So I packaged it up as software. And from there, we just sort of found the pain points and opportunities our own customers had and ourselves. Like as we grew from like one person, just myself, to like eight people over the course of like forever, like a decade.
Which is a whole other part of this story, which is just totally crazy. So you're building this product. You're solving problems one piece at a time. It sounds from what I've heard from you that it was always focused on sort of the small business.
Yeah.
What made you like particularly interested in the small business? Because I mean, I would tell you, like, as a person who was in consulting, working with small businesses, now knowing the story, I understand why. But like, as a person who was an operator, I couldn't stand working with small businesses because it was so
no. It,
was
it, does, just so it doesn't difficult. Make a lot of logical sense, right?
So, but it works great.
Yeah, no, it was great, and in part, like I grew up, my parents always had some small business of some form. I was always surrounded by the idea of small business, seeing like the level of care and passion that a small business has. So working with a small business compared to working with enterprise, one, I just enjoy it more.
Yep.
And then two, I think it's a whole category. You look at all these software companies, and what do? They start focusing on small business, they get a little traction. And then as soon as they can, they start moving, you know, mid-market to enterprise and chase the bigger contracts. Theoretically, it being easier, things like that. I'd like to think that, you know, outside of like what our platform can do and things like that, hopefully we can actually drive a little bit of a change within serving small businesses and not abandon them.
So I think you bring up a really interesting point that's not, I mean, it doesn't really matter what business you're in, but like this can be literally anything.
Yeah.
You mentioned, and I don't mean to like use Salesforce as an example, but they're pretty much like the epitome of the CRM example of enterprise.
Yeah.
And in order for their business model to work, and probably every business, yours included, for to some extent, obviously sales is huge, but they literally have to, this is probably not the operative word, but they have to like dine and feast on gigantic businesses that have a ton of money that's just like pummeling out of the windows. It's billowing out of the windows as they drive down the highway because they have to bring salespeople in and just call and paying the hell out of them to get their, and like that model doesn't work to small businesses because you need customers who need you.
Yeah,
the difference is being need versus I'm selling something. And I think that's the one thing that I got, I mean, forget about the process. Like, and I want to walk people through listening the actual process because I'm a customer now, like having used the product. I went online after the first conversation, looked it up, was like, probably too good to be true. Met with you guys, talked to somebody. They're like, no, it's legit. Give it a whirl. Did a free trial. I think if I remember correctly, from the minute that I clicked the link to get started to being onboarded and importing all of the things. Now, granted, I just used a small, you know, small data, not long time consuming stuff. I had my dashboard set up in the same time it took between two calls I had. I mean, it was like minutes.
Yeah, but I think what you mentioned is actually kind of key there. Like the small part about like we talked to you as well, right? And to your point, when working with small businesses, and a lot of people don't like that because they think they can't have sales. They think they can't have that human touch. If you focus on the customer experience and try to automate and get that blend of like automation and like human touch at the right moments, like that person from our team talking to you was probably a critical moment in the process.
I could speak to that. They literally called.
And
didn't, it was within minutes of everything being set. And I'm sure you guys can on the other side see where I'm at. But they called, and I will just say, one, no credit card needed to get this free trial going. Yeah. Two, nobody asked me if I wanted to buy anything. They called me and said, do you need any help migrating any data over or anything that you need migrated over to see this at its full capacity?
Yeah.
let us know. And then I said, yeah, I could use help. And they emailed me within, I think it was like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then Rachel was on the phone with them the next day and we had everything migrated. Yeah. We didn't even do it. You guys did it.
And that's the thing, like when focusing on a category, like if you truly believe in it. So like for us, it's small business. We truly believe small businesses will grow. We'll grow with them.
Yep.
So there'll be more revenue. You do things that don't make sense on paper, meaning like migrating all your data,
yeah.
like probably doesn't make sense on paper. The free strategy sessions we provide people, yep. like you can just call us or set up a time for 30, 45 minutes. And like, that does not make sense. Like people would look at that and think that doesn't scale. Right. But what we see is really if we help a small business grow, that additional sort of customer experience that they're going to share, that will fuel into more growth. It's taking a longer term approach, so it's not for everyone, but that is a type of business model that does work.
Yeah. No, so I mean, to that point, I'll take it even a step further with this. So yeah. like you, when I look at you just talked about how it doesn't, like you would think it wouldn't grow, you think it wouldn't scale. The problems that your specific target business client has is that they don't have time. They don't have time or the resources to have somebody figure this out. When I use Salesforce, I had to literally hire a person.
Yep.
And they suggested, I got discounts, whatever, but they suggested a person who would help me integrate this.
Yeah.
And that,
there's a whole lot of job titles that have like company name, administrator behind it.
And that wasn't cheap either, by the way. Yeah. Like that, and that goes along with what was a basic part out package. I think it was like 15 grand for the year for me. And they integrated it and yada yada. But then once it came time to migration, Pardot was one of like five things, right? That we had as the package. First, you're paying a bunch of money for all the different, you know, capacity of emails, etc. But then the problem that came to me was I was a very small team at the time. It was me and three other people on my team who were almost exclusively content, so they had no background on this. I don't really have any background other than having used it, you know, at different positions in my life. And what happened was it just went dormant, and 4 or 5 months went by. We never used it. We never got onboarded because it was just, the cost was cost prohibitive.
And we see that all too often. And I think we're seeing a fundamental shift in software as a service in general, of where it has to be a little more intelligent. It has to give you those ideas. It's one thing to have tech and to have features, but like you probably don't care about features. Like nobody cares about like capabilities. It's more about what is the strategy that's going to help your business, help something grow. And so if a platform can provide that, that's the only way like a SaaS company is going
to
survive.
To complete the story of my Salesforce experience, and again, I'm really not trying to knock on them. We went to Dreamforce with them. I love the business. I have owned a lot of stocks in Salesforce. But as a small business proprietor, it just didn't work out. And what happened at the end of it is I did not renew, and it's over. And I wasted 12 of the $15,000 was unused and just pissed away.
Yeah.
And I'll ask you, and you obviously don't have to answer this, but like, what is the percentage of people who are on your platform who stay on more than a year? I'm going to guess it's pretty high.
Yeah, it's pretty high. And so to kind of prove that out, like a reason why most people move from small business and go up market, it's really revenue stability. So the fact that we're able to retain our revenue while focused on small shows, like if you can show value, and this can be applied to any type of business, value, time to value is so important. Right?
So I want to take this as a pivot point into the operations and how you build a company like this, because you talk about how this is like, what, 2003? In 2003, I was a student at Marquette, and I can tell you CRMs were the furthest thing from my time in mind. How do you... let's put this in chunks.
Sure.
The first like 5 or so years when it's you and like 7 other people, how do you stay on point with a mission and a vision? I'm going to assume you always had a bigger vision, but it just kept fulfilling, or maybe not. Like how
not,
did you?
Not entirely at the time. Yeah. So when I started the company, and I think a lot of companies start with not necessarily some like mind blowing, like we're going to take on this market and take down so-and-so, right, in the marketplace. So it was more, one, I was just trying to pay for college at the time, simple things like that, and then started finding value and started seeing things. We really didn't look at competitors a lot, especially early on, and that's what's kind of allowed us to think a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Also, focusing on smaller businesses, if you're focused on smaller businesses or consumers, you have a little bit more control over what you do. You're not solving for a known pain point, like you would in terms of enterprise, which gives you the capability of really shifting the way of doing things, rethinking things, and not just providing more of the same to the market.
So I want to ask you a question about that and just drilling deeper on the, you mentioned the not, you're like really not paying attention to competitors.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're going to be in the same, like have the same viewpoint on this, but in the media space, things are coming up nonstop, right? I mean, it's just constant evolution, and the disruption is insane. And I originally, and I'm still a believer, and obviously with the data stuff that you guys are involved in, I know you're a believer in data and information and having intel. But I also think that there's the paralysis by analysis, and even so far as to go, I spend so much time looking at my competitors that I make bad decisions because I'm chasing after things. Yeah. I am like a firm believer, and I say this to almost every startup founder we deal with, is like, yes, before you get started, know your competitive landscape. Yeah. Know your customers. Get as much info as you can. But at a certain point, you need to hit go, and you need to have blinders on and just race towards the mission and be damned with the rest of it.
Absolutely. So some of the biggest hurdles we've seen would be just sitting, waiting.
Yep.
And it's waiting, not even necessarily analyzing things or whatnot. It's actually waiting, fearful of what might happen if we succeed, which is the most messed up thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like if something starts taking off, like what do you have to plan for, right? You're going to have so many tens of thousands of new users on the infrastructure side. What do you have to do? Is everything going to stay online? But by sitting there waiting, over planning, you're planning for something that may or may not happen.
Yep.
And that holds you back.
Yeah, it's
time wasted. The other thing is, if you only listen to customers or if you only listen to the obvious or the competitive landscape, you're going to do the obvious small iterations.
Yep.
That'll make you maybe somewhat relevant, but not like, you're not going
to
shift it.
You need to be 3 years ahead,
right?
You need to be looking way down the pike. Like, you do the obvious.
Yeah.
You do a little more than the obvious. I'm going to focus on this and make sure I fulfill the obvious.
And the thing is, like, if people are not saying you're crazy, like continually, I think you're doing something wrong.
And that
goes to that scalability, like doing things that just don't make sense. But also to like when we introduced the, like, we didn't have a CRM at first, like in terms of a sales system in the platform. Introduced that internally, people literally told me like, this is a bad move. This is crazy. That was a differentiator with us, right? Even at automation. So like, you have to have these big bets, and they won't all pan out, but that's fine. But it's better to be that than to turn into more of an irrelevant company or brand.
I tell my wife, Jen, all the time the same thing you just said.
That
all the things I do just seem crazy. If you're not calling me crazy, that's, I'm not making the good decision. Yeah. That's just true. Yeah. I'm just a true that one is being coined. I'm a true genius. Yeah. You're a genius too.
Good luck getting that.
It's not good. It's like, it's going to go as well as you think it would go. And so the next part here, that you're sort of like pulling these little onion, peeling away at the onion here. You have done something that I think is remarkable. And from a founder standpoint, when we look at like Mike, my partner, Mike Rodman, you've met, when he does these investments in companies, we have continually talked about this. I think you probably know Vic Pascucci from Lightbank as well.
Yeah.
Vic talks about this every time he's on the show, finding the unfair advantage and like, what is that competitive thing that I can do? And usually for us, when I talk to Mike or even Vic, it usually comes down to this founder who has like just a force of nature, and it doesn't matter what you say to me or what you do or what you throw at me, I'm going to keep coming. And I look at your company and you talk about going from, we were just going to be this, to all of a sudden you're looking 3 to 5 miles down the road. Somewhere in the middle there, you had to make a decision to figure out the fastest path to revenue to stay relevant, to be able to be 5 years from now.
Yeah.
And you're not even, I mean, I'm going to assume that during that time, you're not doing a ton of revenue. It's just like getting by.
Well, we were making money. We were growing, like fundamentals I just believe in with the business.
Yeah.
And so it was slower than some would take, right, in terms of a path. And at times we were just trying to survive, to be honest, like, you know, the true, like, I think small businesses like that, and we're definitely a small business then, still are in some capacities, they just don't get the credit they deserve, especially when they have some sustainable aspect to them. It's not the story that's going to be very interesting or whatnot, but those are the businesses.
Not then, but not afterward, then, they're like the most, I think it's the most fascinating story.
Yeah, but they build such amazing, and even if the business doesn't even scale like to a crazy amount, just the fact that it's like a sustainable business, I think owners of those businesses or people within those companies oftentimes feel like they're like behind or something like that, or something is not providing that.
I'm going to try not to breach an NDA with a person we just talked to this morning. Yeah. So I'll leave the names and everything out of this, but I've known him for 5 years. He's in sort of the manufacturing aerospace kind of world. And every person known to man on the VC world has said, like, you're on to something, like you could build this gigantic thing. He is doing $2 million in revenue, which is nothing, you know, respective to some, but as a small business,
it's great. Yeah.
Two people.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Two people.
Yeah,
yeah. He builds an automated process to basically do all of the legwork after he does it. Then he builds a process to have it automated within reason. And he's looking at like And the first thing everyone said, that's not scalable. And he goes, it's not meant to be.
Yeah.
What I'm trying
it's
to
by
do,
design, yeah.
it's by design.
Yeah.
I'm trying to literally prove my case and go one area, one step at a time through my market to understand everything that I need to know. And once I do, and I've got customers, which like are the DoD and LG, yeah. like major players. Once they do, then I can turn it on.
Yeah.
Then I can go
yeah.
raise the money to do what I need to do, but I don't want to take any chances. And that's kind of what you
have
did.
That
you play the long game,
that, right? Like, and so for myself, like, customer experiences are like an obsession.
Yeah.
So one could...
I can tell, yeah, obviously.
Yeah. One could just take that and run with it and go after like the obvious things and areas and just try to copy the competition. But instead of that, as we were building the business, like when we needed a help desk, we didn't go buy a help desk. We
yeah.
built it. When we needed live chat, survey, anything touching a customer experience, we always built the product, which
yep.
makes zero sense from the outside, but you get that understanding of the fundamental thing, right? And from a timing standpoint, I think a lot of people think about timing the wrong way.
Yeah.
As in there's like this opportunity window that's just going to close and all of a sudden like a customer experience is going to be solved and you won't be able to. And in any category, there's always some ability. It's typically evolving, right? So I think having a little bit more time to get there to really figure out like some differentiator and to run with it is something people need to do.
What's the line? It's slow is smooth, smooth is fast. I don't know if you've ever heard this line before.
Yeah.
I think it was actually probably not the most appropriate analogy, but like the movie American Sniper, I think he says it. It's about being like in the moment, you want to be as absolutely fast as possible to capitalize on opportunities. But at the same time, the process itself needs to be consistent and smooth and operable and scalable. Otherwise, the whole thing just gets, it's great for a minute and then it explodes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So speaking of that, as you guys are now hitting like, not hitting, you have hit AGA curve and you are starting to really scale up. How, or maybe do you continue to practice the same way that you have at this pace? Like next time you need a help desk and you're going 100% month over month, do you have time to slow things down and build it, or do you acquire it, or do you feel like the fact that you never did that is sort of like a golden rule?
Yeah, no, I think now we've taken an approach where we, like, if we need a help desk and it's for a specific case, we'll go find it. But our thesis on the whole problem of a customer experience has evolved as well a little bit. What we were chasing is like a perfect customer experience, right? And to get that, there's no one platform that'll provide it.
Yeah.
So while like, you know, many people are attracted to like the idea of like an all-in-one and whatnot, there's a lot of benefits to something that's more of a combination of tools.
Yeah.
So what we're really aiming to do is really combine tools, best of breed tools for like sales, all different things, bring all that customer data together, and we can orchestrate the customer experience across tool sets. That's the only way we'll be able to really help as many small businesses as we want to be able to help,
yeah.
while allowing them to just kind of use the right tool for the right thing.
So I think you've built this sort of, I guess you call it a mini empire at this point. You've built this empire around small businesses, 60,000 strong across the world. Do you see yourself creating verticals within that that are, I don't want to say chasing enterprise because that's clearly not what the mission is, but like opportunities that are going to come your way. Like I'll look at this and think, what would you say is like the time frame that the bulk of the 60,000 has come? Like, has it just been slowly accumulating, or like, has there been
it's
a period
been
of time?
More rapid in the last couple of years.
Okay, so the last couple of years you get there. I'm going to guess that just the help that your product delivers to these people, it's a growth driver.
Yeah.
So these guys should be growing.
Yeah.
So can you stay in and play with them, I guess is what I'm getting
at. Yeah, and using that idea of really kind of owning the customer data, orchestrating on the customer data, if their needs change as they scale, they can swap out tool sets and whatnot. So from scalability from our side, really works well. While at the same time, we really do like focused on small business. Like we'll have opportunities where people will come in and be like, hey, we'd like to change this, or like, no, like if that's what we end up doing, that's fine. But we're not going to do that on demand. Once you start taking something and turn it into more of a consulting thing, and consulting is fine, but you have to go in with it like you're a consulting company then.
Yeah.
But if you're crafting a product, that should be something that is bigger than any customer feedback.
I think it's one thing I think is really interesting from the customer standpoint is you're right. I mean, I think we all, especially small businesses, we all want to have that all-in-one toolkit.
Yeah.
And you bang your head against the wall trying to build it or find it. And of course, you're always disappointed. But I do think that like one approach that I've seen from your company that is unique than the others is this the dashboard, Like to just like, we have a HubSpot, we use it, but it's fragmented in certain ways. It's like good lead gen, but then after that, it's like kind of piecemeal. And part of that's because it's the small business version, not the enterprise. But then you go to Salesforce and that's just like all, I mean, that's just all over the world. When I look at yours, it's like you can have, you know, marketing automation, sales pipeline, obviously your CRM, your contacts, your emails and so forth. But then you have this app sort of base where I can say, well, we still use Splash or we still use Facebook Ad Manager and things, and I can plug it in so I can create all of my own all-in-one, if you will.
Exactly.
But it's not an all-in-one. So in other words, I can...
And over time, like, over time, your needs may change and you should be able to swap out tool sets and whatnot.
Yep.
Back in the day, that would be something like more of a like a larger enterprise would do, have all these specific tools, where now small businesses are having 2, 3, 4 tools to start, even with like a solo entrepreneur.
Just which to me is crazy. So like,
which is awesome, though.
Yeah, it's
great
awesome
for the whole ecosystem as well.
Totally agree. So I look back for you was 2003, so it's like a completely different landscape. Okay. For me, it's 2012 when I start getting into the entrepreneurial thing, and I'm looking like I had a lot of tools that you probably created and didn't have when you started. What does the future look like in this space? I feel like, and this is probably something that I'm going to guess you're going to agree with, but I think we're at like just the very, very first layer of what can happen in the marketing space and in the CRM and sales, the automation space.
Yeah.
Where do you see, like, where is your 5-year vision?
So I see it a lot less about functionality or features in the way of it's not going to be, it's not going to be like chatbots take over everything.
Yeah. Or God, like I hope that.
Yeah, that would be terrible.
My best friend's a Slack bot. It's fine.
Yeah. But it's more in the way of personalized suggestions and predictions, meaning take existing functionality in any platform, whether it be an event platform, marketing platform. When you start, instead of having to actually set up and think about what to do, you're guided, right? And everyone's doing this to some capacity right now, but that degree of sophistication has a lot of growth ahead of itself, and that's where you're going to see the most value, meaning like small business, large, doesn't matter what size business, they're going to see more impact that from that than any single feature or whatnot.
I totally agree with you. I think one of the spots I'm hoping for, and I think I see as like a could be potentially really revolutionary, is to your point about the data and sort of like, I'll use an example with us. We send out our email on Tuesdays at 8, whatever time it is, and the click rate will be whatever it is. Certain areas of our newsletter, which, by the way, you can go to technori.com and you can find that newsletter by subscribing. Go free to events. Plug.
Yeah.
But the what's cool about it is I think it's cool. It's segmented off to where there's like this feature story, and then there's two companies you can invest in that we have equity crowdfunding that come on the show. And then there might be your podcast will be the next one, and then like some kind of blog post. We can tell in a heat map like who clicked on what. And I think that to have automation, and I know that this exists to a point, but it's not, in my mind, smart enough yet to where it can redirect an email to that person who clicked on the investment thing and send them more information based on all of the content we've already uploaded, but then take it a step further and actually notify us and say, you know, the hit rate on this one was this, you should think of doing this differently, or the next time it like pre-automates my content. Like I just have to upload the content and it automates it for me.
And so like what you're talking about, that's a good example of it, because it is possible in quite a few platforms, and technically it would be possible to set up with our platform as well.
Let's do that.
But you don't want to have to set it up.
Yeah,
is what you're
correct.
Saying as well,
right? I wouldn't know what to do.
Yeah, but like if that was just done for you, and that goes to the point of it's not necessarily going to be all new features. It's taking what is almost common sense, right? Like, but like taking it and packaging up in a way where it's done for you.
Yeah.
And because there's probably 20 different things similar to that you can probably think about. So like looking at all of those different things. And then surfacing the ones that have the biggest impact.
I mean, to your point here, I mean, look at like Facebook. Recently, this has been going on for a while, but you post things and it'll tell you, you know, you had this much engagement. If you did this, you did this. Now they're trying to sell us ads, obviously.
Yeah.
But like the fact remains that it took the performance on the back end and spit back a sentence that I understood as a regular Joe and was able to go, okay, so this would have been a tactical decision that I could have had.
Yeah.
Now I don't know how to do it, but. Yeah. In the future, it could be set up so easily as to say, would you like us to do it? Yep. Yes. And then it sets the whole thing up and the things in motion.
And then the nice thing there is it's not only nice for you, but the actual end user or the contact is actually having a much better experience.
Which is what this is all about.
Which could mean like fewer messages, but like more relevant.
Yep.
And just sort of the right touch points.
And I want to ask you one final question before we do talk about the active campaign is now sponsoring the inbox and all this kind of stuff. But one, and you may not be the person this, we'll see. I hate when people flood my inbox with just like random shit, and it's like it only gets worse by the minute. Yeah. Do you notice, as a person who manages a company that does this, do you notice a certain like rule of thumb that we should all follow when it comes to how we treat our mailing list? Because I feel like people, and this, I mean, no offense to anyone out there who in good faith sent out emails over the holiday saying, you know, happy whatever, whatever. I buy software from you. Yeah. I don't need you to tell me happy Merry Christmas. I don't, that does not, that you just took another spot in my inbox. Like what is the rule of thumb? What do you see as something that people should follow?
Yeah. So one, I don't like classifying ourselves as an email marketing company, even just for that reason alone. I'd say it really goes down. There's no one rule. It's not like send every Tuesday, skip like the third Tuesday or something like that.
Right now that's our strategy.
That might work, but there's no like single, thing that's going to work for everyone. So that might work for you, but it might not work for another brand. Right.
And it might not work for you all the time either. And that's the thing, like to know that.
And then like, so you don't like a holiday email, right?
Yeah.
So like, but other people might.
Sure.
So it really goes down to more of the contact level. So as there's a better understanding of each individual contact, that's where technology and platforms should assist brands with sending.
Yep.
Meaning like what we're working on right now is really figuring out like when would someone want a message, at what frequency and things like that, to try to do that at a personalized level. So you would set it like, so for you, you do every Tuesday. And that's probably actually the right spot because that's what you've been doing. That's like what seems to work.
Yeah. And we host all our events on Tuesdays. Like, exactly. We just try to own Tuesday.
It makes
Tuesday.
The most sense. Yeah. But like you could then have some variance at the contact level to even refine further to a degree that you wouldn't be able to do as a group. So I think that's more so. And also a brand sort of knows like when you're communicating to your customers if they really want it or not.
You should know.
Like you know when you're pushing the bounds of that. Yep. You know if is my messaging the equivalent of going out to a parking lot and putting flyers on cars? Like maybe that might annoy people when they get to their car. Similar thing on an inbox, right? So if people are engaged, if content's relevant, if they want it, that's what you need to strive for.
Let's wrap a nice tight little bow around this. Going all the way back to the beginning when you talked about the importance of how you migrate everything over and how you integrate and set up. Yeah. You can buy anything you want out of the box, and everybody offers essentially the same thing. We can have a ton of emails, and how you set it up, how you integrate it, how you manage it is everything.
Yep.
The difference between ActiveCampaign after this conversation versus everybody else, in my mind, at least as a user, and now having listened to you, ultimately is the help you integrate and migrate your stuff over so that you can set this up so that what you just talked about can actually be done once and then repeat. If you go buy the most expensive, exquisite sales pipeline, CRM, automated program on the planet, everything, you're spending $50,000 a year per use, whatever it is, it's as good as your integration.
Yeah.
Like if it's not plugged in everything and it's not learning anything, then it's
and then
literally
you have
a box.
Data silos created all over the place and you don't actually have an understanding of your customer.
No. And that is not scalable in the end. And that's the part that these small businesses, and we always talk about this on the show about everybody else, small business or startup. If you want to go from small business to quote unquote startup to growth company, it's about scale.
That's
the whole game. Very cool. Jason, this has been obviously a lot of fun to talk to you about this stuff. And we have an inbox segment, which we do every single show, including this one. And we have been, I guess, given the gift of a partnership with you guys that enable us to provide the inbox sponsored by ActiveCampaign. Yeah. And everyone who's listening to this show, as well as everyone who will be getting the newsletter from now on, right on the bottom, you'll be able to click a link to ActiveCampaign, and you will get your second month free if you're a listener to the show or you're a fan or whatever. But you guys have taken this even a step further, which is just incredible. All of the founders who come on this show who are the next Jason, or current Jason for that matter, or better than Jason. I usually don't want to put people better because that's how you lose your job, you know.
I don't know, there's a lot of space out there, there's a lot of market share.
Is for sure. But just and obviously comment on this how you want, but I think the main gist is the qualified founders that are coming on the show, thanks to you guys, are now going to have the access to potentially have ActiveCampaign as a suite account for a year.
Yep.
Which is just incredible. Can you talk a little bit more about sort of that? And
yeah, so part of that is really, you know, this belief in small business and startups of helping them grow at this critical time. And so that's why we just want to help.
Yeah.
And as part of that, or as part of the free month, free second month and whatnot, like take use of strategy sessions. Like we have a team of people that'll actually, it's free.
Yep.
You can just sign up and get a one-on-one where someone will guide you, learn your business, and come up with some ideas. And the ideas might start basic.
Yep.
And they're going to be crafted by you probably a lot in terms of direction because you know your business more than we could possibly
ideally
know. ideally.
But this is to your point, this is a small business. So like you actually learn, I think we were, at least before Rachel joined our team, I learned a lot from the calls from Google and Facebook. They didn't realize I was just using them, but I was learning basically how to build the profile. I didn't know what the hell. I still don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Yeah.
But your team.
But I think you probably know more than you give yourself credit for, like everyone else that's doing this, right? So
maybe. I'm not actually giving you
a lot of credit.
No, I know. That's too much credit because I'm looking at it like I know where I want to go, but I have no functional idea how to get there. And I get a little bit overwhelmed when I look at CRM in particular. When there's a lot of buttons to push and like it automates, and I don't think I'm speaking for myself here, it is very scary to know that you've given over control to something else to send emails
in an automated fashion
to people who you're afraid to lose
possibly.
From your name. Yeah.
That. But you know the important part. You know where you want to go, right?
Yes.
So that's the most critical
part. And you know how to make sure that
I
don't mess that up.
With that in between.
Amazing. Yeah. Jason, thank you so much for taking the time. People go to activecampaign.com, start with that. And then obviously check out our newsletter and things like that at Technori on Facebook. We'll share this podcast as well as everything else. And the links will be there and you guys don't have to worry about anything. But I just really, as a startup community, really appreciate the offer. Super cool to partner with you guys. And then as a Chicago entrepreneur and investor in companies, the story of ActiveCampaign is just, it's an awesome one. So for those of you who don't know the story, this is your, I guess you know it now. I don't know. That's the deal. Thank you.
No, thanks for having me.
Of course, anytime. Learn more about upcoming Technori events, investment opportunities, and check out the blog at technori.com. Download the podcast on Spotify and follow us on social at Technori, or you can follow me at Katoon. Boom, that's a wrap.